Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 142. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Be excellent to each other.
Party on, dude. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. So we have some new releases to talk about, we have a bunch of news to discuss, and then we have this week's big topic, which is going to be our favorite multiplayer games from throughout the years.
Man, that's a lot of stuff.
Indeed it is. So let's not waste any time. Let's get going. Let's kick things off by talking about an M-rated game that came out a couple of weeks ago, Wolfenstein 2: The New Colossus for Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I mean, since it's M-rated, I feel like you should cover it.
Well, I am rated M for mature. It's true. Whereas you are rated T for teen.
You are Hoffman, Hoff Machine, but all Hoff.
Very true. Pete, did you pick up Wolfenstein 2? I know you were kind of looking forward to this one. Did you grab it as well?
I am looking forward to it. I just couldn't pull the trigger just yet. I've got too many other things to play.
I see what you did there.
Too many other things to play at this moment.
Pull the trigger. Yeah, I'm with you there. But I did take some time to check this game out. And let me kind of warn you. It starts out very, very slow. Like, you know, I'm a big Metal Gear fan, but a lot of people complain about Metal Gear and Hideo Kojima because, you know, sometimes his games start out really slow, lots of cutscenes, and this is very, very similar.
There's
some very lengthy cutscenes. Yeah, exactly. There's some very lengthy cutscenes that I guess are telling the story of the previous game in the series, and then there are lots of cutscenes just setting up things for what's going on in this game. There are these flashback scenes where you see, like, your evil father abusing you and your mother.
Yikes.
And two things really stood out about this. One, it makes Hideo Kojima seem like, you know, a master storyteller. And second, this introduction is actually, you know, pretty brutal and, like, intentionally offensively gross and violent. Like, it's going out of its way to be like, yes, this game is M-rated, and if you don't like watching this stuff, maybe you should go somewhere else.
Wow. Yeah, they're just like, if you don't enjoy the first few minutes of this, you're not going to like the rest.
But yeah, going through all this stuff takes quite a while. I think it was like 20 minutes or something before I could actually really start playing. And even then, in the first level, you initially start out in a wheelchair. Because I guess you were like severely injured at the end of the last game. And so you're in a wheelchair. You know, maybe you have bionic parts. Maybe your willy's been turned into a machine gun.
Whoa.
I couldn't really tell for sure.
You know, the original Wolfenstein kind of has something not the original Wolfenstein, but the original Wolfenstein of this gen had something kind of similar, a scene where you're in the hospital.
Well, yeah, you are recovering from your hospitalization, so you don't have your full move set or your full mobility, but, you know, pretty quickly you do get the satisfaction of mowing down stupid Nazis, because in that first level, that's all they send after you is the stupid ones who just, like, stand around and look at the walls instead of looking at the passage that, you know, a guy might be creeping up behind them, so you get to sneak up behind them and murder all those Nazis. Of course, that is very satisfying.
Well, they are Nazis.
Yes, they had it coming to them. And then, you know, you start the second level, and then there's like another lengthy cutscene, and it's even more brutal than the first one, and then you really feel justified for, you know, taking out all these Nazis. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but it's, you know, very unpleasant stuff.
All right.
But yeah, once that second level starts, that's where the real game begins. You get a power suit, and so you can finally move around. You can duck and jump and all that good stuff. You get a full arsenal of weapons. You get your grenades. And, you know, I am not really a first-person shooter guy, but it did seem pretty darn good for an FPS. The production values are quite stellar, very high. It seemed to look pretty darn great for a Switch game. And I did, you know, fairly much enjoy it in all of its M-rated grossness.
Now, did you play mainly in handheld or mainly in TV mode?
I only play it on the TV, only in docked mode.
I forgot, you're like a pirate. I only play in docked mode.
I think pirates would play undocked an awful lot, but yeah, I only play it docked, so I'm not sure how the performance is when you're playing in handheld mode. I'm not sure if it takes a hit, but yeah, I only really played a bit into that second level. But it was fun, it was enjoyable, it seemed to control well, it seemed to look good, and it seemed to have pretty much all the kinds of things you would want in a M-rated first-person shooter.
Yeah, I'll have to pull the trigger and and buy this thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you like FPS games, if you like Doom, I think you will probably like this game.
Now, I don't love FPS games, but I do enjoy them from time to time. I just want it to be on my permanent record that way.
Okay, good to know. Yeah, as I was playing this, I kept thinking, you know, after waking from that surgery, I felt like I should have like a chainsaw in place of one of my arms or something like that. And so far in the game, nothing like that has happened. But, you know, despite that, there are, you know, lots of cool things to do. You can do melee attacks. You can do stealth kills by sneaking up behind guys. You can do the traditional headshots, all that good stuff. It's all in there. Like I said, I have not played terribly far into it, but, you know, from what I've played so far, seems pretty darn good.
And it's great if you like killing Nazis.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Especially.
And that concludes the M-rated section of this podcast.
For the most part, yes. The other game that I was trying out recently is one that I've been waiting for quite a long time on Switch, and that is Pocket Rumble. That is the 2D fighting game that's inspired by classic Neo Geo Pocket fighting games.
I thought that was your high school nickname.
Doesn't even make any sense.
I know.
At any rate, it is a sort of simplified one-on-one 2D fighter. It has universal special moves, so everyone has basically the same controls for, you know, throwing fireballs or doing whatnot.
Cool.
And also it has, you know, a very, very Neo Geo Pocket look to the game. You know, the Neo Geo Pocket was, you know, a few steps up above the Game Boy Color at the time.
Yep.
And it was a pretty nifty looking system back when it came out, you know, almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that they have emulated that visual style and put it on Switch.
Right.
But, you know, this game was announced quite a while ago. It was shown on, like, that first Nindie Showcase before Switch came out. And it was supposed to be, like, a launch title, like, back in April of last year.
When I saw the show notes, I was like, wait a minute. I thought this was already out.
Well, it was supposed to be, but then the developers were really quiet about it. You know, I tried, you know, reaching out on Twitter to be like, hey, what's the news on this game? They didn't say anything to anybody, and I thought the game was just going to get canceled. I thought it was going to disappear into nowhere and never come out, but lo and behold, it finally did come out. And so after all this time waiting, you know, I finally got to play it, finally got to check it out, and
now, I've heard good things. What do you think?
Well, there are some things I do really like about it. I like the aesthetic. I like that the characters have some, you know, pretty unique traits to them. So, you know, even though the game is, you know, heavily inspired by Neo Geo Pocket, it's also seemingly inspired by Capcom's Darkstalkers game.
Oh.
You know, in that game, the characters are all, you know, monster-based.
Right.
And a lot of these characters are very similar. Like, there's this one character who turns her limbs into chainsaws, just like the zombie in Darkstalkers. And then there's this guy that turns into a werewolf. And then he can, like, do these, like, you know, cannonball attacks that are very, very similar to the werewolf in Darkstalkers. So, you know, Darkstalkers has always been a favorite of mine, so it's kind of cool to see that emulated in Pocket Rumble.
That is cool.
However, on the downside, man, the AI is, like, super cheap. Like, I couldn't believe when I turned this on and jumped into the first fight how the computer just obliterated me.
Maybe they just, like, didn't adjust that very well.
And as far as I could tell, there's, like, no way to adjust the difficulty, and there's no way to adjust the number of rounds. Maybe I just didn't find it or something. But initially, you know, as I'm trying to learn the ropes, the computer's just jumping in and totally kicking the crap out of me.
Well, you better get good. Quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I must have lost like a dozen times against the first opponent. But then after that, I was able to take him out by being kind of cheap. And then all the opponents after that, I was able to do much better against.
Hmm. I kind of want to high-five the developers for handing you your booty.
How dare you?
Speaking of pirates.
But for a game that seems to be priding itself on accessibility, I was surprised that there weren't more options and that it wasn't very newbie-friendly. Honestly, I think classic Neo Geo Pocket games were more pick-up-and-play than this is. I guess I really should have played the tutorial and the training modes before diving in. Or maybe I just picked a bad character to start with. I chose Werewolf Guy.
Well, you know, it was your first playthrough, so maybe you just had a learning curve, right?
Yeah, there definitely is one, and you know, that's just something to be aware of when you go into this. It does indeed have a learning curve. But again, though, you know, maybe if I had gone with a guy that has, you know, the fireball instead of the guy that turns into a werewolf, then I would have had a bit simpler time initially. But yeah, that is something to warn you about.
Yeah. And of course, if you're playing multiplayer, then it doesn't matter at all.
Very, very true. And that is, you know, supposed to be one of the core aspects of the game, is that because it has the universal special moves, you should be able to get into it, you know, pretty easily and effectively. But yeah, don't overlook that tutorial, I guess.
Cool. So would you let this permanently rumble in your pocket?
At this point, No, at this point, I'm not going to. I have been waiting for it for a long time. I finally checked it out, and I kind of just ended up feeling a little bit empty compared to what I was expecting. So maybe I'll get it down the line, but right now, I think I'm actually going to hold off.
Hmm. All right. Fair. Yeah, I do have to say, I watched a trailer for it recently. I think it was the launch trailer, and it actually looks pretty good. That's kind of unfortunate to hear that it didn't pan out as well as you'd hoped.
Yeah, your mileage may vary, of course, but I guess I just had different expectations. It certainly looks the part of a Neo Geo pocket fighting game, but I was hoping it would play a little more like one.
Sounds good.
There was one other game I also got to try out a little bit of recently, and that's a game that came out not too terribly long ago. That title is Hollow Knight, which is a very moody, atmospheric, Metroid-style action-adventure. And I hadn't played a whole bunch of it, but you know, I had been hearing such good things I had to try, and I just want to give some initial impressions of the game. It does seem to be really, really cool. The combat seems solid. Exploration is fun. There appear to be a lot of items that you can buy and, you know, hidden whatevers for you to collect. And, you know, I only, you know, got to play the game for like 15 minutes or something. But, you know, so far, I'm agreeing with pretty much what everybody else is saying, and that is that this game is, you know, very well made. Has a lot of great gameplay in there. Really looking forward to playing more of it. You know, hopefully I will have a chance to really dive into this title soon. Have you happened to play that one by any chance?
Yeah, I actually decided to pick it up on the recommendation of a coworker.
Okay.
And I'm really enjoying it. I haven't played it all that much more than you. I'm probably about an hour, hour and a half in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but you know, the art style is, I think it's amazing. I really wasn't into it at first. You know, I kind of prefer the pixel art, something in the vein of Shovel Knight or something.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
But it really grew on me, and I noticed that, you know, the animations of all the bugs are really pretty unique and interesting. Mm-hmm. I also thought the combat was pretty fun. Just like, you know, the environments are all kind of destructible. It's kind of like, it reminds me of like Zelda, where you just chop grass or break pots for fun. There's just things mm-hmm. all littered around the level that are just, you know, interactable and breakable.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
And then just in general, it seems like it's going to be pretty big. I couldn't tell, you know, from my cursory playthrough, but, you know, as you mentioned, it's definitely like a Metroid-style game. So I hope that it gives me something in the world of like Steam World Dig 2 or something. But it already seemed more difficult to me. It seemed like some of the
yeah, that's what I've heard.
The enemies just kind of like charge you. There's a couple enemies where if you hit it once, it requires two hits to kill. But if you hit it once, then it like just keeps coming at the same speed, which is not kind of a normal thing that you encounter in a lot of games.
Yeah, I haven't encountered that yet.
Usually you kind of hit an enemy and it kind of bounces back.
Right.
But in this one, it's like they just keep charging. So you kind of have to learn the little nuances of attacking each enemy.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've heard there's a lot of you know, back and forth between you and the enemies, and kind of learning each enemy's individual pattern is the key to enjoying the game.
Yeah, and then there's this weird health replenish mechanic where you basically collect, I don't know if it's souls or what, but the more bugs you kill, the more your little gauge fills up, and then you can actually convert that juice into lives.
Or your health, yeah. You just you know, press the A button, it you know, turns these souls into a health replenishment. So you know, even though you do seem to, you know, take a lot of hits, and the game can be pretty challenging because you always sort of have that to fall back on, I think that will probably mitigate it at some point.
Yeah. And then I will say, if I had any complaint about it, just in the short time I played it, the handheld mode is, you know, the character is quite small, so it kind of gave me the feeling of, like, you know, almost playing, like, Super Mario Land or something, where you just, your character is really tiny. The coins look super tiny to pick up.
And then when they're really tiny just on the big screen.
Yeah, when I played it on my TV, I was like, wow, that actually looks, like, reasonable, but on handheld mode, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, I can see that. Have you acquired any cool traversal moves so far? Because, you know, right now, all I'm doing is just, you know, jumping and attacking. I know there's going to be more stuff later on, but I haven't acquired any of it yet.
Yeah, I didn't. I definitely encountered some places where if you could wall jump, you could keep going. Or if you, I don't know, if you could do a double jump, you could keep going. Mm-hmm. So excited to see where that goes. But yeah, I feel like the standard stuff is in store. I just don't know what yet, so...
Oh, yeah, it'll definitely be there. But, yeah, can't wait to encounter it.
Yeah, so far I'm definitely riveted, and I want to play much more of it.
And I do hear the game is quite massive. I mean, even though it's a downloadable game for, what, like $20-25 or something. Oh. I hear that it has like as much content as like a $60 game. So that is a lot to be looking forward to as well.
Yeah, this one's actually 15. I couldn't believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of game for your buck.
Yeah, definitely. All right, cool. Well, I wish we had more in-depth to say about this game, but, you know, right now, so far, so good. Even with this little bit of gameplay, it certainly seems like a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. That takes care of our game impressions for this episode. Let us move along to some news. And this week in the news, ghosts, cartoons, and games, 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 indies everywhere.
Amazing.
Let's start by talking about those ghosts. Specifically, Nintendo has announced that Yo-Kai Watch Blasters is coming out September 7th for the Nintendo 3DS.
Hmm.
You know, it's kind of seemed like there has been a bit of a hole in Nintendo's autumn lineup, and, you know, this is one of the games they're going to be filling it with. And, you know, this is not just another Yo-Kai Watch game. This one is a multiplayer-focused action RPG that's basically a parody of Ghostbusters, complete with, like, this total knockoff of the Ghostbusters car.
Really?
Yeah. You haven't seen the trailer? It's pretty ridiculous.
No, I'll have to go watch.
Yeah, this game was released in Japan all the way back in 2015. It even had a sequel that was released just last year on 3DS, but now it is finally making its way to North America. And you will collect all sorts of different yokai. The yokai are categorized as attackers or healers or rangers or tanks. And so you basically need to assemble a squad that's right for the job from more than 400 yokai, including some brand new characters that weren't in the previously released games. And then you engage in real-time action battles with up to four players locally or online. Apparently it also has a crafting system where you collect oni orbs to create and upgrade equipment.
But is Slimer in it?
I have not seen Slimer. No, I'm afraid not. I believe the game in Japan was actually called Yo-Kai Watch Busters, but they changed it to Blasters, probably to avoid any you know, legal shenanigans.
Yeah.
So there's no Slimer in the game, but there are two versions of the game. There is the Red Cat Corps and the White Dog Squad. And each of those versions has unique yokai, unique missions, and bosses that are exclusive to each version of the game. And you can also connect with your Yo-Kai Watch 2 game to get special characters, apparently.
Hmm. Now, are you more of a cat or a dog person?
Oh, man, that's hard. I mean, I guess if I really had to make a decision, I would say I am a dog person in real life. But I would definitely get Red Cat Corps when it comes to the game.
That's fair.
Yeah, I like that Yo-Kai better. What's his name? Jibuyan or something like that. I like him better than whoever it is on White Dog Squad.
Yeah, agreed.
So does this game float your boat? Any interest in this one? Did you play the previous Yo-Kai Watch games?
You know, I'm actually really not familiar with the Yo-Kai Watch series. I wish that I was a little bit more into it because it seems pretty fun, but yeah, just never kind of got into it.
Yeah, I picked up the first one. I like barely played it all. So, you know, I doubt I'll get this one, but I am very curious about it. I'd like to try this, you know, different action-oriented spin on the Yo-Kai Watch franchise. And, of course, I am still a fan of my 3DS. So it is nice to see one more game is still coming out for that old system.
Yeah, it's a slow trickle now.
Indeed. Indeed it is. Now, Nintendo has also gone on record saying that there are other autumn releases that they have not talked about yet. Mm-hmm. So there is going to be other good stuff on the way. We just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, that is confusing. I mean, I assume that there were more. You know, in general, it's kind of, I found this year a little bit disappointing. And I hate to say that because mm-hmm. I'm still very, very content with my Switch. But, you know, as opposed to the flow of games in year one,
mm-hmm.
year two, it definitely feels like there's less of like, oh, like ARMS is coming out this summer or something.
Yeah, we have a couple great Switch games coming out later this week, those being Captain Toad and Octopath Traveler. But then, like we talked about on the show last episode, it seems like there's not that much for the coming months. And, you know, E3 didn't do anything to tell us what's going to be coming between now and when we get, you know, Super Mario Party. So it'll be interesting to see what else they've got. It'll be interesting to see them filling those gaps. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they present these games when they only have, like, you know, a month or two to get people hyped for them before they hit. So hopefully there's something cool there.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I like it. I mean, some of the best surprises Nintendo's had recently have been stuff that they announce and, like, 2 or 3 months later you're playing it.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, but I guess we'll see.
I promise.
Well, one way or another, I hope they have something new to tell us about soon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, although I guess one thing they did have to tell us about were some plans for upcoming Amiibo.
Amiibo!
Oh, do tell. That's got to be tickling your whiskers.
Oh, indeed it is. So, first of all, you know, it wasn't until just recently they revealed that the release date for the Pearl and Marina Amiibo from Splatoon 2 is actually this Friday. So, if you have been waiting for those, you know, that's when they're going to be available. That's when you can get them. It'll be out this Friday, July 13th. Same day as Octopath Traveler and Captain Toad. Lots of good stuff this week.
You're going to be happier than a redneck with a popsicle.
I have no idea what that means, so I'm just going to ignore that comment. But then, even more importantly than that, Nintendo's Japanese website commented that there will indeed be new amiibo for all of the returning characters in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Okay, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so they specifically mentioned by name that the Ice Climbers and Pichu would be having amiibo, but judging by what they've said, it also means that we will indeed be getting Young Link, the Pokemon Trainer. And does that mean we'll be getting, you know, the Pokemon Trainer as well as Squirtle and Ivysaur, since Charizard already has his own? I don't know. And then on top of that, we'll be getting Wolf as well as Snake.
Mm.
So assuming that is all accurate, that's a lot of cool new amiibo to look forward to probably sometime around or after the launch of the next Smash Brothers.
Yeah, plus you know that there's a couple of characters they haven't announced yet, so I'm really holding out for a Captain Toad.
Yeah, that would be very nice. I think that he would be, you know, one of the most obvious characters to include in the game, so still going to keep crossing my fingers for that. But, you know, whatever amiibo come out, you're sure to know that I will be getting them regardless.
And I will steal them at some point.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we'll see about that. Anime Expo also happened recently, and there were several Switch games revealed or announced at this event. One of the ones that I am most looking forward to is called AI, The Somnium Files, which is a game coming from Chunsoft for Nintendo Switch.
Hmm.
Pete, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess you have no idea what this game is, right?
You jerk, and you're right.
Well, it is the next game from Kotaro Uchikoshi. He was the guy who made 999 and its follow-ups, and you know those games were quite well received by a certain segment of fans. It was something that I really enjoyed, mm-hmm. So I'm really happy to see what he is working on next.
You know, I actually do know of those games, and I am intrigued by those. I just never played any.
Yeah, they're good. If you ever get the chance, you should totally check them out. They are very interesting and enjoyable to play if you like puzzles and you like a compelling story.
I'm waiting for the Switch collection.
Well, I don't know about that, but this game is coming to Switch, and it does sound very interesting. It stars a character named Detective Kaname Date, and he is apparently able to go into people's dreams and explore suspects' psyches.
Mm.
So I don't really know anything about how it plays yet. I don't know if they've revealed anything about that, but you will get to explore these various dream worlds to uncover clues and discover mysteries and learn the truth. And just judging by Uchikoshi's previous work, this game should be a blast, so this is one I'm totally looking forward to.
Cool. I definitely will put it on my radar.
Another game that sounds pretty darn cool is called Stardust Galaxy Warriors Stellar Climax, which is a side-scrolling shooter for Switch.
Mm. Wow, that name is a mouthful.
Yeah, it's already out on other systems, but it is now making its way to Nintendo's system, and it offers shoot-em-up action for four players. It seems to have lots of weapons, big bosses, and lots of bullets to dodge. Unlike some games in this vein, it is not retro style. It's got some pretty modern, slick-looking visuals, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does. It definitely looks like a fun shoot-em-up.
Yeah, for sure. And then another one that looks interesting is called Ghost Parade, which is from Axis Games. It's supposed to be coming out sometime next year in 2019. And this one looks very kind of bizarre, to be honest.
Hmm.
It's sort of a side-scrolling action platformer of sorts, where you are followed around by these various ghosts that seem to have different abilities. And, from looking at the trailer, it was kind of hard to tell what the game is all about, but, in a way, and this is going to sound kind of weird, it sort of reminded me of A Boy and His Blob.
Oh, weird.
You know, not the original so much, but the remake where you're always accompanied by the blob that you can then use in various ways to accomplish various tasks. And just this game, the fact that the ghosts are constantly following you, kind of like the blob was, and the fact that you can use these different ghosts to do different things, you know, seems sort of a little bit similar. Maybe it's just me, maybe I'm totally off my rocker, but there did kind of seem to be some similarities to me. And that game was a lot of fun, so you know, this one could be very interesting as well.
All right.
And then one other game that looked interesting to me out of Anime Expo is called Deathmark. That's another one from Axis, and I don't think they gave a release date for it yet, but it is a horror visual novel in which this freaky-looking, you know, sort of tooth-like mark appears on people, denoting that they will soon die.
Mm-hmm.
And the footage I've seen of this game shows a lot of dark environments where you're searching with a flashlight, so, you know, lots of opportunities for things to jump out of the dark and freak you out. Of course, it's also a visual novel, so it means there's going to be, you know, lots of text to read, mm-hmm. lots of mysteries to unravel, and lots of things to creep you out.
Yeah, I'm getting creeped out just looking at the screenshots.
Well, then mission accomplished by the Deathmark folks, I guess.
Seriously.
Yeah, I do like myself a good visual novel. So, yeah, I'll be interested to check this one out whenever it's available.
You can do that alone.
But speaking of anime and horror-related things, the folks over at Netflix have revealed that Castlevania Season 2 does indeed have a release date. It is going to be coming out on October 26th. I think it's about 8 brand new episodes.
I'm really excited for this, Chris. How about you?
Yeah, I thought that the first season was far, far better than it had any right to be. I enjoyed it quite a bit, so I've been waiting for the second season to arrive.
Yeah, I think it's almost time for me to rewatch season one.
Yeah, that does sound like a good plan. I mean, you've still got, about 3 months or more before season two lands, so you have a little bit of time. But yeah, that is not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool that it comes out right in time for Halloween.
Yeah, totally. I don't think that is a coincidence. I think they planned that out for sure.
Cool.
And I think they've said that there is already a third season planned as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Lots of Castlevania on the way.
Yeah.
Not from Konami, because they don't give a poop. But, hey, I'm glad that someone is keeping the Belmont legacy alive. That's for sure.
I'm glad they're giving other people the right to poop.
No, I think Konami does quite enough pooping on their own. Thank you very much.
Have you played Frogger?
And also in the same vein, no pun intended, I swear, the folks responsible for the Ace Attorney anime have revealed that season two of that one is coming out October 6th in Japan.
Oh?
Yeah, obviously I'm a big fan of all things Ace Attorney. Season two is based on the third game in the Ace Attorney series, Trials and Tribulations. And there's no word yet for sure whether it's going to be localized into English, but given that the first season was, it was even released on Blu-ray and DVD, I have high hopes we will get this one as well.
I object.
Overruled.
I know what you're going to be doing this October.
Well, should I be so lucky? Like I said, not sure if that means it'll be broadcast here in the U.S., if it'll be localized right away, but you know, I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Very cool. Now, hopefully Netflix will come out on Switch soon so we can watch Castlevania on our Switch.
Oh, yeah, true. Very good point. Very true. That would be nice indeed. There were two little things that I wanted to make mention of before we switch away from the news. One of them is a correction that I needed to talk about from last episode, where I was discussing Captain Toad and how they have added these new Super Mario Odyssey-inspired levels to the Switch version of the game. And it turns out they have also added them to the 3DS version of the game. Previously, I was under the impression that it had the same levels as the Wii U game, not the brand new Odyssey levels, but that's incorrect. So if you're trying to choose between the 3DS game and the Switch game, know that they both have the brand new Super Mario Odyssey levels and are basically the same content-wise. So just wanted to get that out there.
Good to know.
And the other thing that I wanted to bring up was this quote I've seen going around online, where apparently Nintendo's senior executive officer, Susumu Tanaka, had stated, quote, "We are looking to release around 20 to 30 indie games on Nintendo Switch per week."
Mm-hmm.
Pete, what do you think about that?
Well, it is a little odd to hear that, because really, I just want good games.
Yeah.
I don't need 20 to 30 terrible games.
I mean, to me, it sounds a lot like shovelware. That sounds just like a big, fat pile of games that's not going to do anybody any good. And I'm sure that there is going to be, you know, good stuff in there. I mean, of course there'll be good stuff in there. And the way it is now, I mean, we're already getting like, you know, 15 to 20 indie games per week, probably. Right. But to say that you want to have more is just crazy. I mean, if there is one problem with the Switch and the eShop right now, is that there is so much stuff, it's impossible to, you know, look through it all and see what's good and see what's worthwhile. There's just, you know, way too much stuff.
Yeah. It's almost easier just to look through the sales games.
Yeah.
Just so you can go, anything that I wanted to purchase that I haven't already?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they do have that featured section now, so that's sort of a step in the right direction, but they really need to do something if they're really going to have, you know, so many games coming out. I mean, that is just a crap ton of games, and it makes me worry. If there's going to be so much stuff that you can't keep track of it all, there's just no way that all of it is going to be good, and suddenly the system's going to be known for having a giant glut of junk.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. My hope is that when the Switch Online service launches, if it does, in September, that they do something to the store to overhaul it. Now, I don't know anything, but that just seems like that would be the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with these lofty goals of, let's see, if that's four times a week, then you have about, 80 to 120 new games coming out each month.
Yes, that would be like, more than 100 new games each month. And, you know, let me say, you know, it's not like I want Nintendo to be some gatekeeper that's like, no, we have, you know, very high requirements for bringing out games on our system. But if Nintendo is going to allow basically anything to be on the system, it would certainly behoove everybody, I think, to, you know, have them come out at perhaps a bit more reasonable rate. I mean, because it just seems like, you know, if you're a user, you're not going to know what to buy.
Right.
If you're a developer, even if you make something good, there's a very good chance it's going to be lost under a tidal wave of maybe not garbage, but just, you know, so much stuff, so much Me Too. And it'll be really, really hard for anybody but a few developers to really make a mark. So,
right.
You know, I kind of hope that Nintendo reconsiders their position on this because, in general, while I like the idea of having lots of choices, it just seems, you know, unfathomable that this wouldn't be bad news for a lot of developers and publishers and users. So that is my thought on that matter.
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, they would add something where it can kind of sort by the way it's rated and how many rankings that it has, right? But yeah, it's kind of unbelievable. I mean, even when I went to go buy Hollow Knight, I thought it would still be on the main screen, and it certainly wasn't. It was like buried, and it's not even that old. It came out at E3. So
it's just
kind of unbelievable that the catalog fills up that quickly now.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, on the other hand, out of all the problems Switch could have, this is probably one of the best ones. It's much better to have, you know, too much stuff to sort through than way too little, I guess. Right. So that's a silver lining, I suppose.
Yep.
Okay, then, that takes care of the news. Let us move along to some listener mail. This first letter comes from listener Blake, who writes, I listened to every episode, and yes, I did listen to the Super Mario Brothers the Movie commentary back when you released it.
Nice.
It was hilarious, and the only reason I didn't write in sooner is because I thought you'd get a flood of emails, but I've only heard you read one on the air, so here's another. You and Pete have a great rapport, and I'm glad he's finally the me on your podcast album art as Samus and you as Link.
Aww.
I get a kick out of seeing that. Can we just take a minute to appreciate how incredible the Switch is and, just as importantly, how much third-party support it's getting? A non-Game Boy or DS Nintendo system hasn't gotten this much love since the Super NES, IMO. That is all.
Well, I appreciate the love in this email.
Yes, indeed. Blake, thank you for listening. I appreciate all the kind words. He's totally right about how much support the Switch is getting. I mean, that really ties into what we were saying just a little bit ago about, you know, Nintendo wanting to have, you know, basically 120 new indie games on the Switch every month. So in one way, it's definitely great. It's really cool to see, you know, so many people supporting the system. Yeah, on the other, you know, they do need to really figure out some way to make things more sortable in that eShop, don't they?
They certainly do. And, you know, I keep reading, you know, article after article about how the games that come out on Switch sell better than any other platform.
Right.
And I think that's just a testament to the fact that if a game has no notable difference from any other console, then people want to play it on Switch because they can play it anywhere. So it's nice to see it. It certainly is. It's really incredible when you think that not long ago people were counting Nintendo out.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, Blake, thanks again for the letter. I appreciate you listening to the commentary and putting up with my drunken ramblings.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to me that anyone has actually purchased the movie or already owned the movie and listened to it with our commentary. I don't know if I would have done the same, but I thoroughly appreciate anyone who's done that.
Yes, indeed.
Glad to hear people are enjoying.
Our next letter comes from Brian Booth, and he writes, I've really enjoyed your post-E3 commentary, but the last couple of episodes have got me thinking about a different topic. While I enjoyed your lists of candidates for the Pie in the Sky NES Classic 2, a few of them, no offense, remind me more of candidates for upcoming dramatic readings. Not that that's a bad thing. I had actually been thinking about asking you and Pete about your favorite obscure gaming titles, and now you've already covered the NES list. For me, I thought of 8 NES games that weren't on the Classic that I'd like to play again on actual legal hardware. I'd choose Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, Darkwing Duck, Robin Hood Prince of Thieves, a truly underrated game, IMHO, Bucky O'Hare, and Rockin' Cats, a truly obscure platformer, similar in some ways, but for most players probably inferior to Bionic Commando. I've never been much for video game sports unless there's a quirky twist, so my last 3 are super fun but pretty obscure sports-light titles that I can't recommend enough. Arch Rivals, Base Wars, and Caveman Games. All are at least worth a quick YouTube search. But for you guys, what about other platforms? Are there any other hidden gems that you think should have gotten more love on classic compilation releases or just more notoriety than they have? Keep playing with power and talk to us soon about your picks for an SNES Classic 2.
Now, I have to say this is a perfect opportunity for a Mega Man soccer plug.
First, let me say, how dare he? Dramatic readings. For the record, several of those games mentioned last week were already dramatic readings, I'll have you all know. Trojan, Mega Man, Shadow of the Ninja, Blaster Master, even Metal Gear, all of those were already dramatic readings. And were the picks really that obscure? I thought, you know, I mean, if you grew up with the NES in the house, I would think most of those were pretty common. I mean, not G.I. Joe, but, you know, was it that bad? I don't know. Sorry, please continue.
What has me most mad about this, though, Chris, is that I didn't know this was the topic for last week, and now I'm a little angry.
Oh, well, now's your opportunity. You can make up for it and mention any other hidden gems that you would have had.
Well, if you haven't mentioned it, I hope pro wrestling was on your list.
Of course.
And then I would also hope that Wizards and Warriors was on your list.
It also was, yes.
Oh. And I also would like to see Shadowgate potentially on a NES Classic list.
That was on my list too, man.
Wow, look at that.
It's like I was reading your mind.
That is truly off the top of my head, and I had no input from Chris, and I did not listen to that last podcast. Sorry.
Because you're a jerk.
Sorry, Chris.
Wow, I can't believe me and my nemesis had some of the exact same picks. Crazy.
Now, did you also have Urban Champion?
I did not have Urban Champion, sorry.
Okay, thank God.
For my end, you know, hidden gem games or games that could have been on recent classic compilations, man, that could be an entire big topic of itself. So let me just call out a few right now. First of all, on the Super Nintendo, Soul Blazer and Illusion of Gaia are two of my favorites. And I feel like those, you know, always get the short end of the stick. But those are, you know, great, you know, top-down action RPGs, you know, similar to Zelda in some ways. And I would love to see, like, a quintet collection with those games, you know, the never ever released in North America, Terranigma, and then ActRaiser 1 and 2, because those are all excellent games that, you know, deserve a little bit more attention.
Absolutely. ActRaiser for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, at least ActRaiser was on Virtual Console on the Wii, whereas all these other ones have been, you know, like totally overlooked. And, you know, Soul Blazer is one of my favorites. That's a really great game, and Illusion of Gaia is a lot of fun too. So shout out to those. And then a couple obscure, semi-obscure N64 racing games I'd like to give a shout out to. Beetle Adventure Racing. It sounds ridiculous, but it was actually a really, really fun arcade kart style racing game, published by EA, I believe. And then also Snowboard Kids, which is this goofy snowboarding game that is also very reminiscent of Mario Kart in a lot of ways. So those are two on the N64. Maybe you've never played them, maybe you've never heard of them. Totally worth checking out if you like racing games.
Good calls, Chris. I can attest also to the Beatles Buggin' Racing.
Beetle Adventure Racing?
Yes, yes. Beetle Adventure.
I like that title, too.
Beetle Buggin'. I, too, can attest to the Beetle Adventure Racing. It's a fine, fine game.
Mm-hmm.
As for me, oh, boy. Super Nintendo? So I'm going to go a little bit more mainstream, and I'm going to say I'm still kind of bitter there wasn't an NBA Jam on there.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever play 2020 Baseball? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's an SNK game that was originally a Neo Geo title.
Yeah, Super Baseball 2020, I think was the name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. I would love for that game to be on it. That was also very fun. Of course, they definitely, and we've talked about this before, but they definitely missed the boat with the zombies that ate my neighbors.
Mm.
Oh, of course, the Super Star Wars games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are great as well.
Any of those.
I don't know if I call those obscure, but I really would have liked to have seen those on a collection or on recent Nintendo systems.
Yeah, now as far as N64 games, now I know this is impossible, but Blast Corps was one of my favorite.
Mm, I almost said that one.
Also for Super Nintendo, I would say Uniracers.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Which is a Nintendo classic. And then I would also like to see Castlevania.
Oh.
Was it called Castlevania 64 or was it just Castlevania?
Technically, the name was just Castlevania.
Okay.
And that is not one I'm looking to sink my teeth into again. No, thank you.
Well, I liked Castlevania, and I think it would belong just nicely on an N64 classic.
Yeah. Well, as I've said before, I wouldn't mind seeing a Castlevania compilation, possibly with that game on it. But that would be like the very, very last Castlevania game that I want to see dug up from the grave and brought back to life.
So. just the part with the Frankenstein and the hedge maze is enough to warrant that game's existence. So,
If you say so.
Oh, I say so. Should we also mention Earthworm Jim?
Oh, as far as Super NES goes? Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, that's a great one that, it was really well known back at the time, but it's probably, considered pretty darn obscure now. But yeah, that'd be a great one to see come back on some sort of classic compilation. Yeah, that'd be great. Bring back Earthworm Jim for a new generation. Totally.
Sweet.
Okay, that takes care of the letters for this week. One thing I wanted to say, though, upcoming very soon will be Nintendo Power's 30th anniversary. So to celebrate that on the show, I would love to hear everybody's comments about that magazine. Their favorite memories, favorite issues, favorite articles, anything like that. It'd be great if you would email those our way or send them to us over Twitter, something like that, and that way we can discuss them on an upcoming show.
Yeah, send it this way.
All right, I think it's time to take an intermission, and then we come back, we'll be discussing this week's big topic, which is our all-time favorite multiplayer games. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is our all-time favorite multiplayer games from throughout the ages.
This is a big topic, Chris. I feel like...
Well, that's what it's called, the big topic.
As I was putting this list together, I was like, man, there's a lot of games.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, so, it's not like we can cover everything, but the goal here is to focus on our favorites. And, for me, personally, I feel like, summer is a great time to be talking about multiplayer games. I mean, certainly when I was younger, this is the time for getting together with friends, having people come over, having a big group get together, sit down and play some of your favorite video games in a multiplayer format. This is cooperative, this is competitive, this is multiplayer gameplay in all its forms, and we are here to sit down and talk about all of our favorites, starting back with the NES.
Sounds good. You want to take it away?
Okay, all right. Well, I guess I will start with one that is super obvious because it's a game I feel like I bring up, you know, pretty much every week around here, and that is the NES classic shooter Contra.
Ah, of course.
Yeah, that is a great one, whether it's in single player or in multiplayer, but I feel like, you know, doing that one in two-player co-op is really the best way to experience this game. And I just have, you know, so many great fond memories of playing this in two-player mode, you know, running through the areas, grabbing the power-ups, blasting through lots of enemies. And then, you know, of course, everyone remembers playing, you know, the waterfall area, the third stage. You know, you get to there, and then you're trying to rush up the waterfall, and you would inevitably accidentally kill your friend who gets scrolled off the bottom of the screen.
Sometimes intentionally.
Sometimes intentionally. And, you know, then if you start running out of lives, you can steal your friend's lives, and that add, like, an extra fun dynamic to it. And that was another fun thing about, you know, if you would play with the 30 lives code, you know, sometimes, you know, I'd be playing with a friend who was really terrible at the game. So even if he's got 30 lives, he's, like, dying left and right all over the place. So I've still got 30 men left, and then he's able to keep jumping in and keep continuing, you know, keep stealing my lives, and so we can keep playing the game for a while after that. And it just, you know, it was really, really fun back then. It's still really, really fun now. You know, sometimes when I play it these days, I might make it so, you know, every time I die or every time I beat a level, I might take a nice drink of milk or something. That can be a little dangerous considering how often you can die in that game. But, you know, I think it's a viable option.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah. Contra, certainly my first choice when it comes to NES co-op.
Now, that's one of those games that I feel like is meant to be played two-player.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, the follow-ups are great, too. You know, Super C is a great game. Contra 3 is fantastic. You know, if you can get Contra 4 going in multiplayer, that's great, too.
Yeah, indeed. All the Contra games are pretty much notoriously fun to play multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah, that is a series that is made for multiplayer, and it's so sad that there's really no good way to play it on modern hardware. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, what do you got on your list of faves, Pete?
You know, you mentioned a game that you mention every week, or we mention every week, but I have to say pro wrestling is right up there.
But of course, yes.
You know, pro wrestling really was, to me, the first, like, quintessential wrestling game that delivered everything you really want from a wrestling game.
Yeah, totally true.
You got the being able to throw people out of the ring, you got being able to, like, climb up on the turnbuckle and hit them while they're standing outside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was just like something that you'd only imagined up until that point. And just being able to do that and execute it whenever you want. And of course, it was a little hard to execute things like that, but just it was all there. And then on top of that, Nintendo's characters, they all kind of still stay with me. And like Starman and Amazon and King Corn mm-hmm. Karn and Mr. Perfect. Or no, King Slender is what I meant.
King Slender, yes. Giant Panther.
Yeah. But yeah, just it had it all. I remember playing that game more than most NES games multiplayer. And it's one of those games you could play really competitively at the same time, almost like a fighting game.
Oh yeah, I mean, totally. You could definitely consider it to be a spinoff of your traditional fighting games for sure. And yeah, that was definitely one that I enjoyed playing some in multiplayer mode. It seemed like almost every bout would end up with both of us nearly getting counted out outside the ring, but it was still lots and lots of fun to play in two-player mode for sure.
Yeah, that was almost my go-to when I played the computer. I would usually just try and beat them up outside and then at the last second slide into the ring.
It's nice, except when they turn the tables on you.
Exactly.
Well, a couple other games I really enjoyed playing multiplayer on my NES were the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles games, TMNT 2 and TMNT 3. Mm-hmm. TMNT 2, of course, based on the arcade game. TMNT 3 was an original title, but both of those were a whole lot of fun to play in two-player mode. You know, just got two folks going out there with your ninja abilities and your swords and your bow staffs and your scythes and your nunchucks and beating the crap out of tons and tons of foot soldiers. You know, your occasional giant mutant warthogs and rhinos and all that good stuff. And yeah, just, you know, fun action games.
Yeah, I almost forgot that those were multiplayer, but absolutely, I remember playing that growing up. Those were a ton of fun, as I recall, back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were definitely a blast. Was there anything else on the NES that really stood out to you?
You know, one that really stuck out to me was Ikari Warriors.
Oh, yeah. Another classic shoot 'em up.
Yeah, and you know, like Contra, it was kind of a game designed for the arcade that was meant to be played two player. But what I thought really separated was that once you got to a certain point, you could get like tanks.
Ah, true, true.
And for some reason, in my childhood brain, that was like the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, that was a very cool aspect of that game for sure. Yeah, I never owned that one or anything, but yeah, it's totally cut from the same cloth as Contra. This one was top down rather than being side scrolling, but yeah, games like that definitely better with co-op, I would say.
And I've got two honorable mentions if you don't have any more for NES.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dr. Mario
Ah, okay.
and Mario Brothers.
All right, solid choices both. Both true classics. All right then, let us move along to the Game Boy.
All right. So Game Boy, I've actually got the original Tetris down.
Yeah, all right. Certainly a fine choice.
Now, you did need a link cable to play this. You couldn't just play it over Wi-Fi or anything.
Right, that is true. And so personally, there wasn't a whole lot that I played multiplayer on my Game Boy because it did always require a big tangled mess of cables. So, I don't count any of those amongst my favorites personally, but obviously there was some good multiplayer stuff on there, so I'm glad that you brought up Tetris because that's one of the best for sure.
Well, the cool thing about Tetris was back in the day before the internet and all that, you had the ability to play on your own screen against another player. And I think that element of surprise, especially when you just dump a load of garbage right on their screen, really made it where the NES version and other versions, you kind of are both looking at the same screen.
Well, the NES version, there wasn't even a multiplayer mode in it.
Oh,
Not the one from
yeah.
Nintendo.
That's right. You're right. I think I'm thinking of the Tengen version.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyways, I just thought that it belongs in the great multiplayer game list.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, for me, that one wouldn't be on there, but some of the other later versions of Tetris, like Tetris DS, that would certainly be amongst the multiplayer greats. So Tetris, in all of its various forms with multiplayer, is certainly a game worth calling out as one of the best.
And then I have to give another one, and this is not quite a multiplayer, but you know what? It fits the bill, so I'm gonna have to say the original Pokemon series.
Oh yeah, of course. It's got multiplayer battling, so why wouldn't it count? Of course it counts.
Yeah, but I almost think of it more as the trading aspect and how fun that was and how it really encouraged you to kind of talk about your Pokemon adventures with other Pokemon trainers.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And that tradition continues to this day.
It does. Fortunately, without the messy link cables. But yeah, that's always been one of the great aspects of Pokemon, for sure. I guess we should move along to the 16-bit era, to the Super NES. And I feel like, the most obvious place to start on that one would have to be Street Fighter II. I mean, any of us who grew up with a Super NES around, probably spent hours and hours beating the crap out of our friends in Street Fighter II with fireballs and hurricane kicks and spinning bird kicks, or in your case, spinning car kicks or
How dare
yoga
you?
flames or spinning pile drivers or whatever. And obviously it is, like the quintessential one-on-one fighting game that set the standard for the genre and set all the rules and basically told us, what a great fighting game was all about. And as, the recent 30th Anniversary Collection has proven, it is still great to this day. But yeah, that original, or all of the Super NES versions were, very, very special. They were all really, really fun to play in multiplayer.
Yeah, absolutely. Street Fighter 2 is right on my list as well. I have to honorable mention Mortal Kombat 2 just because it was also very fun.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat 2 was really, really solid. That was a great one.
And I felt like it really was as close to the arcade as possible at the time.
Yeah, the original Mortal Kombat, not so much, and that seemed to lose something with Mortal Kombat 3, but Mortal Kombat 2 was pretty fantastic.
You have anything else on your list?
Well, yeah, quite a few actually. There's some other really great arcade ports that were on the Super Nintendo. A couple from Konami. I already mentioned TMNT 2 and 3 on the NES, but TMNT 4, which was based on the second Turtles arcade game, was even better.
Ah.
And that's another one that I feel like you gotta play that one in multiplayer mode if you can.
That's Turtles in
Again,
Time, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. So you're traveling from New York, where you are right now, Pete, and, you know, climbing into the sewers, where you'll be later.
Eating pizza.
Yes. And then, you know, going to the Technodrome, and then, like, going to the Old West, and going to prehistoric times, and going to pirate times, and all kinds of crazy, wacky, fun stuff. And that is fun to do solo, but it's even more fun to do with a friend.
Absolutely.
What's better than beating up ninjas with a friend?
Absolutely.
And then Sunset Riders, which is a Contra-esque game, but, you know, set in the Wild West. And, you know, lots of shooting action, also jumping over bulls and, you know, riding horses and trying to stop train robbers and all kinds of fun Wild West stuff like that. So that was another one I really enjoyed multiplayer. Mm. And then, building off of a couple games that you brought up already, Pete, you know, earlier in the show, you mentioned NBA Jam, and that is a fantastic, amazing multiplayer experience, and, you know, among the best of the Super NES era. And I'm pretty sure that game not only supported, you know, two-player multiplayer, but actually supported four-player multiplayer if you had a multi-tap.
Oh, it definitely did.
Yeah, and that was pretty darn awesome, as I recall.
Yeah, that was that and Bomberman were really the main reasons to own a multi-tap, but it almost made it a multi-tap necessary.
Yeah, the other game I played with a multi-tap was WWF Raw.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm not going to say it was the best game in the world, but it was also pretty darn fun as well. But the other one that I really liked on the Super NES was Tetris and Dr. Mario. And, of course, you brought up both those games individually, but they were combined into one game pack that was, you know, even better than the sum of its parts on the Super NES. Because not only did they look better, but they added this new competitive mode where you would play the games in sequence. Like, I think first it was like Tetris Game A, and then Dr. Mario, and then Tetris Game B. And being able to sort of, you know, play that, you know, challenge against another player was really, really fun. And, I mean, there hasn't been anything like that, I don't think, in any, you know, Tetris or Dr. Mario game since then. It was something that I really loved for competitive gameplay and something that I wish I could experience on current systems.
Yeah, that actually was a really solid version of that game. I just kind of had to give the nod to the NES version.
Understandable.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Bomberman, to me, was absolutely probably your best bang for your buck four-player on the SNES.
Bang for your buck. I see what you did there.
It really was. It was, it's virtually the same game that they're still making today, but there's a reason for it. It's a quality game.
That is true. I'm surprised, though, that you didn't bring up Super Mario Kart.
You know what? It actually is on my list, and I was about to.
All right, then.
So, Super Mario Kart, and of course, you took my NBA Jam, but that's all right. No, Super Mario Kart was excellent. That really was the game that kind of kicked off the whole series. Prior to that, there were no kart games. So.
Not so much. That is true.
Yeah, it's impressive that it had such humble beginnings. But even back then, the game was really fun. In fact, my favorite item ever was the feather. And it just never made a repeat, really.
Yeah, it was cool that if you have that item, you could use shortcuts that no one else could use. And that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I remember just kind of like hanging around in eighth place trying to find one. Just so you could like jump a wall and somehow get into a higher position.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, Super Mario Kart would not be counted among my favorites. But, you know, some of the later games in the series definitely would be. That's for sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, I mentioned this one earlier, too, but Mega Man Soccer.
That is such a lie.
I just can't not talk about that game.
All right, I think we should move along to a new generation of hardware. Let's move along to the Nintendo 64.
Well, Chris, I'm glad you brought the Nintendo 64 up, because you really can't talk about the Nintendo 64 without talking about the killer FPS, quite literally, of that generation.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really talk about the N64 without talking about multiplayer. I mean, this was, I believe, the first system that had, you know, built-in four-player capabilities. So a lot of the games were focused on multiplayer, and that led to a lot of fantastic multiplayer experiences, such as the one you are about to mention right now.
You know, you're absolutely right. That was pretty fantastic that it came out of the box with four controller ports.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of set the standard going forward.
I mean, maybe there was like some obscure system from some company we don't care about, but as far as mainstream systems go, it was the one that you know, really made that so important. But go on, tell us what made GoldenEye so awesome.
Yes, GoldenEye. I guess the thing that makes GoldenEye so cool was that it really came out in like the first year of existence. No one expected it. It was an FPS made by Rare, who had not up to that point really made an FPS.
Right.
Originally, it was supposed to be this on-rail shooter.
Originally, it was like for Super Nintendo, right?
Yeah, and it was based on a licensed property. So it
right, which is usually
of,
not a good sign.
A lot of things against it. Sure enough, it comes out and it literally changed the game. I probably sank countless hours into this game. I remember this is the game that when I first got it, I rented it. Me and three other friends.
Oh, you're the guy who rented it out.
It was probably more than three other friends. I think it was like probably like five or six of us. And we would just rotate in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up playing it from the time we brought it home, which was probably like 6 o'clock, till about 4 a.m. when we decided it was probably time to go to sleep and wake up and play some more.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I actually didn't have an N64 when that game came out, but my brother did. And he would play that game and have his friends come over, and they were just playing that thing constantly. And I remember you're going out to the store, you know, when it first came out, and it was just always rented out from the video store. It was crazy. I like, you know, it was, you know, like for months, it was just constantly out of stock.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was back in the days of Blockbuster Video. And
yep, exactly. It'd have like a whole wall of GoldenEye 64, but it'd be all checked out.
Yep. And I remember, I think I was the first person to rent it at my local video game store, because I was probably the only one that knew that it came out that day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just a fantastic game. You know, it actually encouraged me to try and like find like ways to play multiplayer. I know some people like hung a curtain, and some people got pretty elaborate, found like a
right, because
splitter.
You're trying to, you know, so you don't cheat by viewing other people's split screen. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, you know, some people like made splitters so that their TV signal would go off to two different TVs. They'd cover up the screens on either TV.
Mm-hmm.
There was even like talk of devices that could like split up signals, but it cost like thousands of dollars. And I remember thinking, how could that be feasible as a child?
Wow, that's nuts.
But anyway, a great game all around and still a legend to this day.
Yep, very much so, for sure. Yeah, it's a shame that, you know, after being sort of the king with first-person shooters back then, that, you know, Nintendo is sort of considered, you know, always a second thought when it comes to the shooter genre these days. But yeah, back then, they were the king.
It's true. What about you, Chris?
Well, I guess for me, the things that were most exciting when it came to multiplayer on the N64 were the wrestling games. I was there for WWF or WrestleMania 2000 and WWF No Mercy. Those were the ones that I really cared about. And it had such a great gameplay system, and it was very simple. You know, one button was for grapple, one button was for punch, and basically, you know, you had strong and weak versions of both. And it'd be like, oh, well, you know, you have counter buttons for both, and you have certain moves that have priorities over the other one. But, you know, you could pick up those gameplay systems very, very quickly, and because of that, you made it really, really compelling in multiplayer mode. I mean, all the characters were basically the same. It's not like you had different moves to learn with everybody. I mean, they had different moves, but it didn't really matter if you're, you know, doing a suplex or a pile driver or whatever. It just, you know, looked cool on the screen and, you know, inflicted damage on your opponent. But it was really this intuitive system where quick strikes countered strong grapples and quick grapples countered strong strikes, along with the reversals on the shoulder buttons, which made it so fun for anyone to just jump in. And it resulted in a multiplayer wrestling experience that really hasn't been matched since the N64 era.
Yeah, you know, when I talk to people about N64, I always feel like I always end up talking about wrestling games.
Well, it had some of the best.
Yeah, and I mean, the ability to just have four players out of the box, I think, really lended itself well to that era. Plus, not to mention, I think, you know, WWF was really kind of having its heyday at that point.
Yeah, that was the fabled Attitude Era. So it was super popular back then.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, these games really, really helped with that. But yeah, you could have, you know, four-player free-for-alls. You could have, you know, two players versus two players. You could just team up and be on the same team against the computer. So, yeah, there were lots of ways to enjoy that game with its, you know, simple but very, very effective gameplay.
Yeah, there was nothing like, you know, just getting pummeled by a friend and then, like, your buddy comes over and helps out and hits him off of you.
Yep.
You know, you're just sitting there getting kicked in the face. And somebody comes and gives a haymaker from behind.
And then You know, if you really want to, you can smack him in the head with a steel chair.
That's right. And I want to.
I just want to hit you with a steel chair.
Hey, now.
Like I did that one time.
Wow. Try to forget that.
Oh, I thought I would hit you hard enough you had forgotten it. Oh, well.
Now, what do you think, Chris? What else?
Well, obviously, Smash Brothers, you know, was a huge hit on the system. I wouldn't call it one of my favorites. You know, I would save that for the later games, but obviously it was a, you know, massively groundbreaking title. And along those same lines, Mario Party, of course. You know, that's where Mario Party, you know, made its splash. Again, highlighting the system's multiplayer capabilities and the fact that you could instantly have something that was really fun for a lot of players. You know, that definitely deserves a shout out.
Yeah, and that was the infamous one where you had to spin the analog stick to do some of the minigames, and
yes.
Nintendo had to issue gloves because kids were burning holes in their hands.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I would have to give the shout-out more to Mario Party 2 or Mario Party 3 rather than the original, since that was kind of gross. Although, you know, it's kind of the players' faults for
oh no!
Not stopping when they see a hole being gnawed through their hand.
Well, it was absolutely the player's fault. And I will stand by the selection of Mario Party 1. I think that it did sort of the same way Mario Kart sort of ushered in, you know, the kart genre. Mario Party, for all intents and purposes, kind of ushered in board games on console.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it wasn't the first one. There were other games like that beforehand, but Nintendo came in with Mario Party like, oh, well, here's how you do it right. Yeah, yeah, obviously it was, you know, very, very groundbreaking, and so, you know, certainly worthy of a shout-out in that regard. Absolutely.
Yeah. And of course, yeah, married well with the console.
Yep.
You know, I will say I think Mario Kart 64 deserves a shout-out on here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally agree, and for the longest time, that was my favorite Mario Kart game. I mean, there are some genres that I think are just as good in 2D as they are in 3D. There are some games that massively benefited from the jump to 3D, and racing games are one of them because you're able to make these courses with, you know, hills and, you know, turns and banks and things like that that you really couldn't do before, you know. That's why the first one, I guess, didn't really capture me because you're just going on this flat Mode 7 surface. But Mario Kart 64 made it really feel like you're going through these wild and crazy courses that were, you know, really light years ahead of what they did in the original. Plus, again, that four-player capability made it super-duper fun.
Yep. And then, you know, I went off on GoldenEye earlier, but I also have to mention Perfect Dark.
Ah, okay.
As it was a very solid sequel. You know, in some ways it was superior to GoldenEye, but I think in most ways it probably fell a little bit short, but it didn't take away from how fun the multiplayer was on it.
Okay, I have to admit, I never played that really at all, I don't think. And I don't think my brother got into it either, for that matter. But if you like that, I will respect that.
Yeah, there was also these modes you could play, basically, with less than four players. So it was almost like a co-op. You could do teams against bots and stuff. Which was definitely missing from the original GoldenEye, which was definitely a ton of fun if you dabbled in that.
Okay, cool. Good to know. I guess the last one I want to mention on the Nintendo 64 is Dr. Mario 64.
Yeah.
We already talked about Dr. Mario a couple times, but you know, this was four-player Dr. Mario, so I got to defeat and force three of my friends to succumb to being overloaded with viruses and vitamins all at once. So, you know, in a way, this one might be even better.
You bastard.
Shout out to Dr. Mario 64. Okay, well, let's move on to another system then. You got anything for the Game Boy Advance?
I actually have one that made the cut.
Okay.
And that would be Advance Wars.
Oh, all right. I don't know if I ever played that in multiplayer mode.
Yeah, Advance Wars multiplayer mode was super elaborate. You could make your own maps. You could, you know, make a map and play it with your friend. And also, you know, turn on Fog of War. And you could have a turn-based strategy game where you really had no idea where your enemy was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of had to plan for everything.
Yeah, it sounds pretty excellent.
Yeah, it really was a great way to play that game. And probably wasn't played nearly as much as it should have been. Again, because you needed a link cable. But fun nonetheless.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't even realize that was in there. But that sounds awesome.
Yeah, truly fun.
For me, there were some really great side-scrolling beat-em-ups I really enjoyed playing in multiplayer mode.
Oh, yeah.
Again, you did have to have a link cable and multiple systems and multiple copies of the game to be able to do it.
And maybe a lamp nip behind you, or...
Yeah, if you had the original GBA, for sure. But both Final Fight 1 and Double Dragon Advance, I thought, were both excellent. I actually got two copies of Double Dragon Advance because I couldn't find anyone else who actually owned that game. So I bought a second copy. So, if friends were like, oh, here, let's play this game. Yes, I have a copy. Here, let's play it. And so those were both really, really fun to, again, in the vein of those other classic beat-em-ups, just cruise the streets and kick punks in the face. Yeah, I would say that Final Fight 1 is the best version of Final Fight that is on Nintendo hardware, in fact.
Wow. Those are bold words from a bold man.
The Super NES version didn't even have multiplayer. It was just a single-player game. It was missing some of the content that the arcade game had, but there was, everything in Final Fight 1 for GBA. So that is definitely one of my favorites.
Very cool.
And you can pile drive people, But as much as I liked those two games on GBA, my favorite multiplayer Game Boy Advance game was The Legend of Zelda: Four Swords.
Mm, good call.
And, of course, that was on the same cartridge as the port of The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past. But, this was a brand new multiplayer-focused mode. You could play it with two players, three players, or four players, and the levels actually adapted depending on how many players you had in your party.
Right.
In some of the later Four Swords type games, the levels did not adapt. You just have to switch between the characters or something. If you're playing Four Swords Adventures on GameCube in solo mode, you still just have your other characters with you and you could change formations and stuff. But this game, it really took into account how many players were there with you, and I really, really appreciated that fact. That made it super playable, whether you just had one other friend playing or you had, two or three. And just something about the balance of the levels just made it super duper fun. Obviously it was a new twist on a franchise I like very, very much. So being able to, use your items in a different way, fight bosses in a different way, and, just experience the game with a friend and, we're shouting at each other trying to solve puzzles and, defeat tricky enemies. It was just, really, really enjoyable to me. And I really love the way that turned out.
Yeah, it's almost unbelievable that they did that, just considering how much work that would be to design levels for different amounts of players. But they did it, and it was pretty awesome.
And I suppose I should also mention that there was that DS Anniversary Edition for Four Swords, and that was basically the same game, just playable on DS, and then of course you could also download it on 3DS as well. And that was just a limited time free download. It was really great that they put that out there for people to be able to play it that way. But if I want to play multiplayer Zelda, that is how I would do it, in one of those versions. I would take that over Four Swords Adventures, and I would totally take it over Triforce Heroes. I think that this Game Boy Advance game that came out so many years prior to Triforce Heroes is just superior in every single way. So, if you haven't played Zelda that way, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, agreed.
And I guess that means we should move on to, more current systems. GameCube, Wii U, and Switch, of course. So what are some of your favorites from modern eras?
All right, well, for GameCube, I have to mention Super Smash Bros. Melee.
Yes, of course.
I almost don't even think we need to discuss it, really. It's still one of the key games at these pro gaming conventions.
Mm-hmm.
There's still this huge, weird love for it. I don't blame them, because it is still an amazing game, and it stands up really well against the test of time.
I mean, all the Smash Bros. Games are pretty great, I would say, except for the original. But, that one... Again, it's you really haven't been able to make anything better than that one. So that was a fantastic game. Melee is amazing. I mean, Brawl is good too. The Wii U and the 3DS games are also good. They're all really, really fantastic. But yeah, it's hard to say anything is better than Melee, for sure.
So I would say that, again, that's the de facto version that I would probably hang on to and reward.
Absolutely.
I didn't play it a ton, but I did... I want to add Crystal Chronicles.
Oh, okay.
Of course, Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles was the full title.
Yes.
And of course, you needed almost $600 worth of equipment to play this game, because you needed a GameCube and a Game Boy Advance and more than one Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, you need a Game Boy Advance for each player, right?
Yep. And you also needed a Game Boy Advance to GameCube Link cable for each system. And you needed the game.
Yes.
So all said and done, it was quite a fiasco. But in the times that I got to play it, it was one of my favorite sort of attempts at like a multiplayer game like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to respect Square Enix for giving that a shot.
Yeah, I did play it once or twice, but I have to say I don't remember that much about it.
Yeah, again, the sad thing was that you, when you had the link cable plugged in, you couldn't charge your system. So eventually you had to give up because somebody's system was going to die.
Yeah, that would be an issue, I suppose.
Yeah.
Good point.
All right, well, quickly going into Nintendo DS, I'm going to say Animal Crossing on Nintendo DS was one of my favorite.
Oh, okay.
It definitely, because of the way it worked and because of the ability to go to other people's towns, it was the, kind of the first wireless Animal Crossing. And then also, you know, the same system could be played by four different people, and you'd have four different people that were starting little houses in that game. And then you could travel amongst each other's houses, which was pretty cool.
Okay, yeah, I actually kind of missed out on the DS one, to be honest. So, yeah, that's a shame of mine, to tell you the truth.
Well, it also, you know, you could write letters much easier because you had the stylus and the actual keypad.
That's true, too.
There was a lot of functionality reasons that made that game really shine.
Okay.
I think you also have to mention Metroid Prime Hunters.
Mm.
Now, it's not one of my necessarily favorite, but I definitely think it deserves a mention, especially for being one of the first really, like, true online games that Nintendo released.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on that one, thanks.
How dare you?
I dare.
We're not talking about Galactic Federation now.
Federation Force, you mean? Yeah, I know.
All right, let's jump into Wii.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, on Wii, I've got New Super Mario Bros. Wii.
Hmm, okay, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that game, even though it can be brutally hard with four people playing it...
It's chaos.
If you had one other person playing it, and you really were both good, it was quite an experience.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't count New Super Mario Bros. On Wii or on Wii U as one of my favorites in multiplayer mode. If I was going to play a multiplayer Mario game, I would probably opt for Super Mario 3D World on Wii U. Because, you know, you had that 3D environment to run around in, there was a lot less opportunity for you to accidentally, you know, stomp all over each other and all kill each other accidentally. I mean, there were still lots of chances for it to happen, but it wasn't nearly as bad as it was in a New Super Mario Brothers series. Still, you know, sometimes chaotic is fun.
Yep. That one's on my list, too, by the way.
Uh-huh. All right.
Going back to Wii, I also have to include Wii Sports.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely on my list.
I mean, it just was like the quintessential packed with the Wii. Almost probably what gave Wii such a edge in the marketplace.
Yeah, that's what gave it the jump start right out of the box.
Yeah, no kidding.
Multiplayer tennis, especially.
And then also, as far as multiplayer games go, I gotta say Wii Fit.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, and in a weird way, because it was almost more fun to like watch somebody else play than for yourself to play.
Hmm.
There was, you know, of course, that hula-hooping girl that they had a video of on YouTube that probably sold a lot of systems. But
I don't know anything about that.
But just in general, I thought Wii Fit really did a cool job of like, you know, tying everyone who played the game together and kind of like dropping hints about each other and sort of setting records. So you'd like want to one up the person who was setting records before you. So really interesting multiplayer, but I would count that as one of the best.
Well, I have to say, I didn't do too much of that. While you were busy getting your exercise on with Wii Fit, I was you know, doing multiplayer stuff like Tatsunoko versus Capcom, which was another excellent, if very overlooked, versus fighting game.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, a lot of the recent Kirby games have had excellent multiplayer. You know, Kirby's Epic Yarn, you know, Kirby's Return to Dream Land, you know, all those supported multiple players and were really accessible for a lot of players. You know, whether you're a veteran or a newcomer, it's something that, you know, older gamers can play with younger gamers, and yet it's still really fun for everybody. So I have to give kudos to how they've really done great things with the Kirby multiplayer in recent years.
Shout out to McKirby.
Yep, for sure. Well, I suppose the other, you know, most obvious one from recent years would be Splatoon on Wii U. I mean, that was another huge landmark title for Nintendo in the multiplayer arena. And again, that's one that I didn't play a ton of personally. But, you know, I've just seen so many people playing it and enjoying it and having a blast with that game. That's certainly one that I would have to consider to be amongst the most noteworthy multiplayer games in recent years.
Yeah, that one's definitely a gem on the Wii U. I guess for me, I have to go with the Switch version, Splatoon 2.
That's true.
Just because I feel like they really nailed the formula and, you know, you just get a little bit more bang for your buck.
I think that's probably fair to say. Plus, it's got, you know, the co-op multiplayer as well, which was something that the first one didn't have.
That's right. And then also, of course, the DLC offering, which is really worth it.
Yeah, although that's mostly single player.
That's true. Yeah, you're totally right.
Regardless, you know, it's hard to deny that you know, Splatoon 1 and Splatoon 2 both have some fantastic multiplayer options out there, and those are certainly great games to play during the summer months.
Well, I think that brings us to our sort of modern age.
Yeah, it definitely does.
And I would have to go with a third-party game, but a fun game nonetheless, Rocket League.
Oh, right.
And I've mentioned that a lot on this podcast, but mm-hmm. not as of late, but it's still one of the best multiplayer games of this generation. I would almost compare it up to, and I know you're going to think I'm blasphemous, but a Street Fighter or a...
That's blasphemy.
You know, Mario Kart type.
It's like Mario Kart mixed with Mega Man Soccer.
I'm not trying to say that. No, I just think it's one of those landmark multiplayer titles that truly kind of captures a lot of people's attention and just kind of started a revolution in its own.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I still have yet to play that game. But yeah, I mean, I've heard you talking a lot about it. I know so many other people love that game, so I can certainly see where you're coming from. Also, you know, it feels like we should probably be saying, you know, Fortnite, but mm-hmm. I still haven't had much of a chance to get into Fortnite to appreciate that game yet. But obviously, I understand the appeal.
Yeah. The other game on the Switch that I feel like is worth mentioning is Mario Kart 8.
Oh, yeah. How did we get this far without mentioning Mario Kart 7 or 8?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think in the current gen or modern era of Mario Kart, Mario Kart 8 really stands head and shoulders above everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's just kind of the definitive version of Mario Kart, especially on Switch.
Yeah, it really is. And like I said before, you know, Mario Kart 64 was my favorite for many, many years. But then Mario Kart 7 came out, and that one, like, you know, blew everything else away. I'm like, okay, this is definitely the best Mario Kart. And that was the first one that I really played in multiplayer mode. And, you know, I would, like, have that game with me at all times so I could, like, you know, bring it out and start playing a multiplayer battle during a lull at work or something like that. And then Mario Kart 8, you know, showed up and was even better than that one. And, you know, it's, you know, very much the same thing, only even more fun and superior to the previous one. So yeah, absolutely, those are definitely good ones to mention. Yeah, those are some of the best for sure.
Yep. And then I did want to mention ARMS. I think it gets a bad rap. it kind of came out right before the Splatoon tidal wave.
Uh-huh.
Or Splatoon 2, as it were. But I do think that as far as new IPs go, it's a pretty fun game, and it has a lot of the, I don't know, it has a lot of the Nintendo charm and style, and the fact that they've supported it for so long is...
I definitely like the character design.
...is interesting to me, yeah.
All right. Good pick.
And then lastly, I feel like we have to mention the 3DS, right? I would say the Monster Hunter series, I think, needs a shout-out. I don't know if I have to go with 4 Ultimate or Generations, but I know that those games are pretty solid. I've played a little bit, haven't gone online too much, but I have played a little offline, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I think I have Monster Hunter 4 on my 3DS. We should team up sometime.
I would probably try to take you out.
Yeah, probably, knowing you. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I guess the one last game I do want to make mention of, I'm going to have to rewind a little bit back to the Wii U, and that is NES Remix.
Oh, good call.
Except you might be thinking, well, Chris, that doesn't make any sense. That's not a multiplayer game.
Right.
It's mostly for one player. But here's the thing. If you are playing that game, and like player one is using the Wii U gamepad, a second player can try controlling the same character and doing the same actions using a Wii remote. And so if both players are trying to play simultaneously and you have had, say, a bunch of milk to drink, it is one of the most fun multiplayer experiences I have had in recent years and is absolutely ridiculous.
Wow.
I imagine most people have not been dumb enough to try that, but I do recommend it.
Wow. That actually sounds pretty fun.
You should try it sometime. It can be wildly entertaining. It's very hard to do well, but if you do actually manage to pull off the challenges while you're basically fighting your friend for control over the character, you can be like, ah, yes, that is so satisfying.
That's really funny.
So give it a try if your Wii U is still hooked up, and you can.
It is, and I will.
All right.
Well, Shazam, Chris, that was a lot of games.
Yes, yes, it was. Yeah, there are lots of great multiplayer options. There's good stuff out there. If you're still playing your retro systems, there's good stuff out there. If you're playing Switch or even 3DS or even Wii U, yeah, lots of good things to choose from. Hopefully this has sparked some ideas if you're in a bit of a multiplayer rut. But yeah, lots of good stuff to pick.
Yeah, and I'm actually curious. I'm sure we missed some good ones.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Curious to hear what people have to think as well.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear from listeners about what some of their favorite multiplayer games are. And with that, I do believe it is time to bring this episode to a close.
Not so fast there, Hoffman.
Oh?
I think there's probably time for one more thing.
Yes. Actually, I believe you're right. And that would be a dramatic reading. This time, it's going to be coming from the pages of Nintendo Power issue number 4. It is the preview of the NES title World Games. Here's a game that travels to the four corners of the earth to bring you the international excitement and the thrill of foreign competitions. Your first stop is the Soviet Union, where you can test your great strength in the snatch or the clean and jerk.
I'm telling your mom.
Next, it's on to Germany for some barrel jumping on the ice, and then scenic Mexico for a little tense cliff diving. In France, you will negotiate the slalom course, and I, a quick stop in Scotland for a bit o' caber tossing. While in the Far East, bow to your 400-pound honored Japanese opponent, and then try to throw him to the ground. Travel to the Great White North in Canada for a good day of log rolling, eh? Finally, back in the U.S. of A., summon your courage and ride the terrifying Brahma Bull. If you dare.
Wow.
Yeah.
That feels very, very stereotypical.
Yeah, I suppose it is. Except for the, was it barrel jumping on the ice? I don't think they actually do that in Germany at all. I don't know where they got that one. Nor do I understand why they're saying good day in relation to Canada. Do they get confused with Australia or something? I don't know what happened there.
Maybe it was not an English speaker that wrote that.
Maybe it was an Australian. I don't know.
Could have been. I like the bitto caber tossing.
That part was pretty good.
The snatch and the clean and jerk is a little questionable.
I have to admit, that was the main reason I picked that for a dramatic reading. I'm not going to lie to you.
As soon as I heard it, I knew.
Anyway, with that said, it is time to bring this episode to a close. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoth, on Twitter at Chris The Hoth, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you left us a rating on iTunes or told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud,
party on, Hoff.
And my Shaolin master, Liu Kang. We will see you next time.